are listening to Teacher Talk It, supporting teachers, parents and students worldwide. www.teachertalkit.co.uk. Like, subscribe and follow to stay in the know.
You know, a group of guys will come up and say, hi, Mr. Sadler, how are you doing? I'm like, who the hell are they? 6'5" tall lads. But we always remembered her and respected
what she did
for them. So she was always a drive and I say a role model for me growing up at 16.
We help teachers thrive and survive with classroom ideas, cutting-edge school resources, and research-informed teacher training materials. You will also hear discussions on the policy, guidance, and research-based publications.
This week, listen to Ross McGill, founder of Teacher Toolkit, interview Stephen Sadler, a DT teacher passionate about technology and robotics, and winner of the Gold Award for Digital Innovator of the Year at the 2019 Teaching Awards. In today's podcast, some of the things we'll be discussing are encouraging girls to get involved with STEM and robotics, the impact Stevens Robotics Club has had on students, and the DT subject being overlooked and requiring more resources in schools.
Hello everyone, this is Ross at Teacher Talk, the most influential blog on education in the UK. Today, the third time of asking, I have a VIP guest, Stephen Sadler, a man of many, many different hats, but he is a guru or, I've got to go worldwide here, Stephen. Maybe you can shoot me down, but a worldwide reputation for his passion with technology, robotics and STEMnet, and particularly lots of things that he does in his work, which I'll unpick in a moment. And he won the award for Digital Innovator of the Year from the Teaching Awards a couple of years ago, Stephen.
Yeah, it's a couple of years ago,
A couple of years ago. So I'll let you introduce yourself to our listeners, tell everyone what you do, and then we're going to unpick STEM and robotics, a topic right up my street.
Well, my name's Stephen Sadler, or Steve as people call me. I've been teaching now for, 20 years or since? I graduated in 96, worked in industry for a number of years, and then came back into teaching around early 2002, it was mid-2002, back to my old secondary school as a technician. Acting as a technician there and teacher, and also helping to develop the school in other areas of virtual learning. I never really intended on staying there, because I was in between jobs after I'd been made redundant.
That's always the way, isn't it? For context, listeners, in my role as a judge for the Teaching Awards, of the many schools I had to visit, stumbled across Stephen at his school. This was just before the pandemic, wasn't it? It was literally October to February, that window just before March 2020, where we were lucky enough to come and see you, and it was phenomenal. Could you kind of give us a visual picture of the kind of things that we saw, if that's possible, and I'll try and add some of my memories. But what kind of things were you doing on our visit for people listening here can get a sense?
You would have seen a lovely, vibrant building as you walked up a long galloway towards the school, and hopefully you'd been greeted very well by my SLT.
Yes, we were.
Coming. obviously, the students, I'd found out it was the students that had actually given me and put my name forward, so I do believe that a lot of the staff didn't even know about it, neither did my head of faculty. So, but I think by that time it'd gotten obviously pretty serious that they had to give up who had actually put their name forward, for the award. This is the time of the Silver Award, and I remember actually being at the school, and my co-head of faculty came to speak to me and said, are you going to be in school on this day? And I said, I'm actually not. And I said, you need to be. And I had no idea what it was for. But I generally had booked to sit my an exam, because I was in the middle of doing my accreditation. So I arranged to go to the Autodesk University. And this event for me is like once a year. To be honest, the Queen could turn up, but I'd still wanted to be at Autodesk University to sit and take this. I was so determined to take this.
There was a bit of a secret going on, and you had no idea.
So I didn't know. So So obviously one thing led to another. It was like, well, no, you really need to be in. I was like, no. So not that it turned into an argument, but it got a bit heated. I'm thinking, what the hell's going on? Why do I need to be in school? And so eventually my head came to speak to me and said, are you going to be in on this day, Steve? And I was like, yeah, I can be, yeah. So I'm thinking, this must be pretty serious. I'm clearly not in trouble. So
you thought you were up for a disciplinary.
Something's going on. But I generally had no idea what was going on until it was like, right, okay, right, well,
they've done well to keep that. You must have been panicking, thinking, what have I done?
I was just confused. I was thinking, well, this is good work. I don't know what I need to do. I haven't missed the consultation either. I was thinking, nothing going on.
Yeah, but, I've done my marking.
Yeah, exactly. So I turned up.
What we saw was, you know... Yeah. In summary, you'll tell me off for not being as technical, but, you know, loads of robots, loads of gadgets, loads of kids playing with all the different projects, a brilliant DT department, happy staff, and just, you know, I'm a DT teacher. It was just a wonderful place to be. And some of the stuff that the kids were producing, it's international. It was international, national, you know, kind of quality material and projects they're producing, wasn't it?
Yeah, definitely.
You know, for the technical out there, could you give us a little synopsis of some of the kind of things they're doing, the robots, the programs?
Yeah, well, they are designing and developing robots using a platform called Vex Robotics. So Vex Robotics is the educational platform that I chose to use and introduce into the school. It's nearly over 10 years ago now. So it's really drummed up from competition. So this competition through learning aspect of getting kids involved in STEM and, you know, getting other people, making industry aware that there's a growing demand, obviously, for all these skilled engineers. And so if we can try and gamify this learning in, you know, through this competition, and really that's how it stemmed. But from that, the kids obviously, you know, developed a love and a passion for working with this hardware, and that's led on to a number of students. One student in particular, Daniel Oakley, to design and develop a robot that will float on water.
And they've gone off internationally speaking in front of lots of adults, haven't they? In big kind of presentations.
We've represented the UK. A number of occasions, up to maybe seven times now, the World Championships in California. So that in itself has been an amazing experience for numerous students that have gone on to set, you know, a number of different standards in their field. And that's also encouraged a lot of other schools in the surrounding area in London and other feeder primary schools to also...
Yeah, now you'll be humble about this, but you're a big cheese in this sector, aren't you?
So they say. I just do what I need to do.
Rumour has it. Okay, now I'm going to change topic, Stephen. Can I bring you back to your 16-year-old self? You know, what was life for you as a young black man, you know... School, education, career paths, role models, all that kind of dialogue. Give us a kind of little whistle-stop journey.
I'd say my role model, I have to say, obviously my parents, my mother in particular, she was a head teacher at two different schools, actually. She used to be head teacher at Broadwater Farm for about 15 years.
Broadwater Farm?
Yeah, it's just after the riots.
Fantastic, wow.
She took ownership of dealing with the community and the family.
I know it very well.
Students. So she was there for a number of years, 16, 17 years before she then was headhunted to turn around another school, failing school.
Was this, 70s, 80s? When was this?
This was the 80s. Okay. And after that, she moved to Effra Primary School, so I had experience of doing some work there as well.
So you had the teacher talk at home all the time growing up.
Yeah, so I couldn't really Skype off. when you've got a mother from the Caribbean.
Lots of reading, lots of homework. Get your homework done.
you've got to get your stuff done. So I always had that a drive, but I always said I'm never going to teaching because I could see the stresses and the hassles that my mother had. But at the same time, I could see, you know, I could be shopping with her down in Wood Green one day, and then, you know, a group of guys would come up and say, hi, Mr. Sadler, how you doing? I'm like, who the hell are they? 6'5" tall lads. But we always remembered her and respected what she did for them. So she was always a drive and I say a role model for me growing up at 16. So that, I suppose, led me to think about having it as a potential backup plan. So, I mean, I ended up studying at Loughborough University, industrial technology, and decided to do a course of education instead of just a straight product design.
What year was that? Can I put you on the spot?
That was, you can guess my age now, that was 1992 to 96.
God, you know what? It's funny world. I miss Loughborough, that exact same course, I think, by one A-level grade. So we could have been best mates, but there you go. We'll start our best mate relationship now. But a great facility. And did you get into sport while you were there?
I was into basketball, into football, into tennis. I used to play a lot of tennis in North London and basketball for Finchley at the time. But again, I was there really because I knew how great it was as a course for D&T and industrial design. So that if you're going to go anywhere, it was if you're going to stay in London, you went to Brunel. If you're going to go to London, you went to Loughborough. So that was the place where I attended.
Yeah, well, London's a diverse place, but you know, not to say you're not going to struggle with, you know, the issues that we're still talking about, you know, many years later. What was it like growing up for you? Was it? I'm sure it wasn't a smooth ride, but
it was tricky. It was difficult. You had to do a lot to stand out. You know, there was even many things always said to you. I can even remember a time when I was just about to start the course at Loughborough, and I won't mention the tutor's name, but he's sort of saying you're going to have to work really, really hard to make sure you can stay on this course, Steve. And I didn't really click what you meant by that, because I thought, well, I made it here. I'm not going anywhere.
He probably didn't say to anyone else, did he?
I was the only black guy on my, or black person on the course for a number of years, actually, for about 3 or 4 years. And it wasn't really that diverse, as I suppose many things weren't at that time. But again, I didn't really look at it. Look through that lens, because I was really there to just focus on what I need to do. You know, I suppose I always had that drive from my parents.
So what happened after Loughborough?
After Loughborough, I did some teaching in Leicester. I did my training actually in Braunston, in Leicestershire. And then I came back and I was working in London at my mother's primary school, actually helping her out at Effra Primary School.
Right.
Get some primary training and really try to decide, like you do, what you're going to do with your life. Am I going to go straight?
Yeah.
and actually, I was keen to work for a design consultancy. There's a lovely lady one of my teachers actually at school, Ross Lucas. She'd actually put me in touch with her son at the time, and I was helping him out at his design consultancy at the time down in Blackfriars, and that was some good training.
So when did you move out to the suburbs up to Barnet?
I lived in Enfield, and so I ended up working in Barnet just purely by accident. It was a visit to pay, you know, the old school a visit just to see what was happening in world design.
There you go. And I guess the key question, you know, so obviously go back to Loughborough, there was obviously a design, electronics, robotics thing emerging here.
Yes.
I suppose we
were at the cusp of that era where software was really coming into play. So
yeah, CAD/CAM stuff.
I think back now, and it was our year, you know, third and fourth year, where we started to be introduced to Autodesk and AutoCAD, release 12 it was, and 3D Studio Max. So the days of marker rendering and doing all your final presentation, you remember those days? The software came out as like, well, if you're not using this software and doing your rendering in 3D.
No, I was lucky enough to meet, I met my graphics teacher at my old school I used to be a student at, October ago, actually, in Fleetwood, Blackpool, before I moved to London to train as a teacher. And we were reminiscing about orthographic projection by hand, and now you can just log on to a computer online. All those skills are gone. So I moving forward, you know, back to the kind of clubs with your school and robotics stuff, at what point did you start to think, right, robotics for kids, STEM club, these skills?
It was around about 2006. At that time, I just introduced the school to a virtual learning environment, Fronter. So we were the first secondary school, I think, in the country to adopt a VLE, convinced them.
Right, brilliant.
This is the way to go. We're a split-site school as well at that time. I think when you
can't remember Fronter.
Exactly, yeah.
Does it still exist?
It does, but we moved on since then. It still exists. Technology's moved on, so we moved on away from it. So, but yeah, that was great to get involved and also see the pedagogy of how the Scandinavians, Norwegians in particular, dipping.
Yeah. Yes.
There wasn't much STEM, but it was more focus was on technology. But at the time, we were working very closely with Middlesex University and a chap called Professor John Cave and Dennis Hallam, who was head of faculty at the time and associate head teacher. We used to really help them develop a lot of their project work and small scale, you know, STEM kits and things. We test a lot of them out with our students through systems of control at the time when that course was running, and D&T and graphics, etc. So, you know, we were very close. We were affiliated with the university, and the campus was basically based in Oakwood. Mm-hmm. So, you know, I could, you know, the days when you could lumber students in the back of your car, come on, we're going to go down to Middlesex and go do some work and work with the senior students for a while and see what's going on there and test things out. So we had a lot of hands-on experience, and then that eventually developed in to what we then introduced was our enrichment of Triple E, enhancement, enrichment, engagement.
Yes.
And I'm sure Leanne would have spoken to you about how that developed over time. And that was really where we got to really trial out things. It didn't matter if it didn't work. We could really experiment. And it was great for the design team. It was hard work because we were making a lot of this Triple E course up at the time. As we were going on for a number of weeks. But the kids loved it. I mean, we've got kids that visit that are in their 30s now that come back and say,
So in terms of what the kids get from enrichment, you know, Monday to Friday we'll know is very busy in a school anyway, but, you know, that after-school enrichment that you offer, you know, outside of the statutory curriculum stuff, you know, what does a regular week
look like? It's on our curriculum. So, I mean, I've got, for example, tomorrow, Wednesday afternoon and Thursday afternoon, I've got my Year 7 enrichment and Year 8 the following day. And so it's great because I can pretty much teach what I want, as long as I'm aligning it with the D&T curriculum.
It
allows me, as someone that's into this crazy stuff, to really push the envelope and start to, you know, do some virtual programming.
And how do you top up your skills? How do you keep up to date with the latest bits of software and make sure, you know, for in your case, you know, world leading and keeping up to what everyone else is
doing? I'm always looking at what universities are still doing. I'm still in touch with people at Loughborough. I'm still in touch with students I know that have gone to Brunel. I mean, I'm chatting yesterday to another student who's at Wolverhampton on an engineering course. I'm always finding out what they're doing and what they're learning so that I can bring that back.
Yeah, they've got the latest kit, haven't they? The latest bit of technology.
And also it means that when our students are, you know, when students are graduating at year 12, year 13 or leaving at 16, they've got a real idea about what they can do or where they want to go. And they usually have already identified what course they want to do because we've invited some students in to do a talk. And we sort of go from there, really. But I mean, online resources, looking at what other people do. I mean, I'm just about to finish my MA in STEM, so that's a key. So I'm mingling with lots of other teachers and finding out their perspectives of how they deploy it within their classroom.
And just could you,
ideas from different people.
Could you just list off, you know, top four or five kind of resources and things you get your kids to do, you know, a kind of thing that you do every year or every term that's the, you know.
Vex VR, which is an online programming platform, which is great to get the kids into coding as well. So if you're a computer science teacher, that's definitely one you want to do. The curriculum's all online. You've obviously got the Vex IQ and the Vex EDR. Again, the curriculum's all online, and that's well supported by the REC Foundation, which is the Robotics Educational Competition Foundation. They're based in the States. And they obviously promote the Girls in STEM initiative, and there's a big initiative.
Yeah, no, I was just going to ask that question, actually. You know, what's your, you know, how are you raising that profile and tackling stereotypes? And I know the answers, but just for people listening,
I think for me, trying to encourage or breaking that stigma, especially with, I suppose it even stems down to things like open evenings at school and letting those parents know that their daughter can actually be involved in this.
And it's girls can code and things like that.
Also can. You know, I've got my, you know, my approach is completely different because I've got my own daughter now who's 8. You know, she's been playing with Raspberry Pis and building little Raspberry Pi spider robots.
Yeah.
All kinds of things. So really I use, showcase my own children and what they do. Been very fortunate that I had Vex Impact, a series and a series of other girl teams, Invexables, Girlbots, and they were all involved in, you know, these girls really took it under their wing to try and...
Well, I met quite a lot of them when I came to visit, didn't I?
And yeah.
I
got so to see... some of them were ex-students coming back as well.
Yeah, I got to see their online IDs and their online projects as well, which was fascinating.
Exactly. And some of them have gone on to, I mean, Zeta now, and a few others have gone on to look at other areas of biomedical engineering as a result of being part of...
Amazing.
Robotics. And they would have never done that. Some of them, their confidence had grown in terms of presenting and, you know, working and talking with, you know, with judges and people like yourself at competitions. And Hannah, she's just really recently signed off to be a barrister. You know, had to
fantastic.
So the level of confidence amongst them has been fantastic.
So, you know, the Teaching Awards was a small part of, I guess, that, you know, people, it was actually a student we said offline before that recognised you and wrote the letter and things
Amy,
like that.
Yeah.
And
Amy and John,
I suspect you're a busy man before, you know, getting that recognition and stuff. So I guess with a teacher training hat on, what kind of things are you doing to support others? Because I'm sure you're in demand. I'm sure a lot of people email you for advice and things.
Yeah, I mean, I always try and we've got a lot of NQTs that come through our school. And one of the things I always try to say to them, as well as if they want to stand out, is I know you're busy and it is difficult, but I think as part of the profession, it's really good to give back an evening of your own time or two. I mean, I probably give it too much, but an evening or two of your own time where at least you can, you're not just putting something on for the kids, but you're learning with them something.
Yeah, sharing is caring, isn't it?
Yeah, exactly. So you have to, and with D&T, you know, the design is such an iterative process that you've got to be repeating what you're doing all the time to try
I think the nature of our subject is, you know, I guess the physical structure of the department is you're always sharing resources and moving between rooms, so it's always that workshop feeling all the time, isn't it?
Exactly.
So in terms of the people that ask you for advice or the kind of teacher training things that you've led externally outside of your school, give us a picture of the kind of things that you do.
I'm also involved with the Create Education Project, so they are an initiative that promotes 3D printing from primary school through to secondary school. So, you know, working very closely with companies like Ultimaker, and the initiative basically, they look to obviously also give a 3D printer out free for schools to actually test for a number of weeks, 6 to 8 weeks. Michelle, one of the ladies there at Create Education, was, you know, very kind enough to drop off an Ultimaker printer with us about 10 years ago, and it accidentally didn't go to the next school because we were doing so much work with it.
I said, someone forgot to check the list or the email.
I ended up paying Michelle a visit at the Bet Show. I don't know if she's listening, she'll probably smile, but she did end up letting us keep it because we did a lot of work with it. But that then led us on
to you doing training, okay.
Yeah, training, also even printing and manufacturing some of the drones you would have seen.
Yeah.
Well, that led to other projects like engineers and things like that.
Fantastic. Now, kind of switching topics again, you know, the umbrella design technology and how the dialogue of, you know, the EBAC and everything else and how DT's evolved as a subject since you and I qualified. I was in a school in North Yorkshire before Christmas, about November, and there was 10 or 12 lathes, beautiful lathes, never used, huge printer in the corner, kids sitting in front of computers, drawing something online, the machine makes it. And I know there's a space for that, but physical labour.
We're still old school. Even today, we're doing our good old wooden boxes and things like that.
Could you give me your own perception, you know, the state of DT across the country? I know you're involved with exam board stuff as well and things like that.
It's a shame because I think when I've been to some data meetings in the past and met other teachers, I found out, sadly, that sometimes there's only one or two teachers, or there's one case, one lady I met at the school, and she was the only teacher in her department trying to provide D&T as a subject for the entire school.
Secondary school.
So I
can't survive.
I'm thinking, bloody hell, I'm struggling for money and there's so much more I want to do. How are you coping? And I've got a good foundation, a good support structure, but you and I both know there needs to be more, subject needs to be put on the spotlight more. And this is something
you turn the telly on tonight and you're going to see pottery shop, you know, all these kind of competitions, sewing bee, and all this technology in front of us, and the dialogue in schools is non-existent, I think, in some respects.
It is, and I think, I don't know how, you know, as I'm not that high up that I see how they're going to manage it financially, but I've got out of my way, as you know. I mean, there's an article I wrote for iNews, they interviewed me where, and I looked at, you know, over the course of the last decade, how much funding I've brought in for the students, and it amasses over £80,000 with trips. Amazing. And events and you know, help with, you know, from parents as well. Even on our first and second trips to the States, we didn't have any money, Ross, to get there.
Yeah, lot of fundraising and stuff,
yeah,
isn't
it? A lot of the parents helping out. I mean, I had one parent.
So, what's your secret formula?
Oh, I can't tell you that.
So you're going to say one parent? We had one parent doing what?
one parent was actually going out to Costco buying a load of sweets, and we were selling even penny sweets.
Double the price.
So we tried every method, but getting sponsorship, working with industry. I think a lot of departments now need to
get
school, and you're not linked with your local industries. It's really important to think. Look at your school, or your location. Look at the map that surrounds your school. Look at all the industrial estates. What do they do? Sometimes, crazy as it sounds, I've gone for, you know, even where I'm living now, I've gone for a drive just around the industrial estates just to look.
To see what's available, yeah.
What companies are there? Any of them?
No, that's a tip.
Any scrap metals? Any acrylic that they're getting rid of?
For PT teacher, there's always a resource outside, isn't there?
There's always something you can use.
On the travels to schools. Go on.
Yeah, as I say, and also, if you find someone that's interested in what you're doing, put yourself out there and invite them in at what you're doing. If you're confident in what you're doing, which I am, and you know what you're doing is good, I've got a great bunch of students that are there to support it as well. And
well, absolutely.
Make a coffee, introduce myself, let the kids talk to them, off you go.
And that's all you need. And we had a laugh offline about my judging process with my colleagues when we came to visit you, but it's a very impressive place to go and visit. So Mr. Sadler, top mark so far, but I wonder if you can pass my kind of end of podcast summary, where I'm going to throw loads of quick fire questions at you and you can't pause or hesitate, so let's see how you get on. Right, so let's start simple. What projects on your desk tonight?
What projects on my desk tonight do you really want to see? There's my
go
camera
on
here.
I've
got the effectiveness of competitive robotics on student learning of computer science. I've got another paper here to read on educational robotics in the stage of secondary education, an empirical study on motivation.
Fantastic. So what's at the moment? What's the title of your working paper?
My working paper is the effectiveness of competitive robotics and how robotics should be used as a driver for STEM learning in secondary schools.
Brilliant. Well, I can't wait to read that.
That's basically what I'm writing on.
Yeah. I'm going to record for video and audio purposes. You need to send me that once you've published it, please. Right, okay, that was a long question. what book are you reading? Apart from your papers, what's your book you're reading for fun?
I've just bought Will. Will Smith, and I've got Kimi Räikkönen's book to read as well.
Okay. Words of wisdom from your mum head teacher. What was her famous catchphrase?
Do as you're told, boy.
Do as you're told. For someone who doesn't know Raspberry Pi, what would be your top tip to get, my 10-year-old son, how could I get him into coding?
Head to the Raspberry Pi website and ask for a lady called Sue. She's one of the senior directors there. And say, Steve sent you.
Steve sent you. Well, there you go, folks. Ask for Sue and then see what happens. What would be your piece of advice for a new teacher in a DT department?
Wow, that's a good one. Make sure you...
Collect the chisels in.
get to know, because I see it a lot, get to know Autodesk software.
Yeah, well, there you go. Mine would be count all the scalpels back in.
Exactly, yeah.
Otherwise, you have the whole kids after school searching up and down the workshop. Okay, biggest career achievement to date? What are you most proud of?
I'm most proud of, to be honest, what my students have achieved. And the fact that they all come back with a bottle of rum to say hello. I love to hear the stories of how how they're progressing in life.
And is there a favourite rum tipple?
It's the white rum, the original.
Ah. Not Malibu. If you weren't doing your dream job now, what would it be? What's that off-the-wall career?
What would it be? Oh, God, it would probably be a racing driver. I've got to think.
Yeah, well, there you go. What, bikes or cars? Or
Cars. Track racing, track day racing.
Yeah. Now, this is a tough question for you. What is your number one piece of CAD/CAM software?
Obvious, that one. That's Fusion 360. Autodesk Fusion 360.
Have you got a favourite drone or a robot?
My favourite robot is the one my daughter's just built. Yeah, it's a 3D printed handmade.
Right, very nice. If we had 24 hours in Finchley, where would we go for dinner? What would we do? What would we see? What's the local landmarks?
The local in Finchley or Barnet?
Well, Barnet, Finchley, or Tottenham even. Where would we go?
I'd probably have to take you down to the West End to one of my old clubbing spots.
All right, so Barnet or the West End of London?
West End in London.
There's not much to see in Barnet, to be fair, is there?
No.
Basketball position?
Always a striker, always the forward.
Okay. Who would you recommend I interview next and why?
That's a really good one. I think you should interview Mr. Dennis Hallam.
Mr. Dennis Hallam,
yeah,
okay.
Yeah, Mr. Dennis Hallam.
I'll look up Dennis and I'll see if I can find him. Stephen, where can people find out more about you? Links online, blogs, tweets.
You can find me on LinkedIn. My Twitter handle is Steve_FCTuning. So you're welcome to drop me a DM anytime.
There you go. And my last question, the big one this time. What would you hope to be your legacy? I don't have a bottle of rum to go with this question, sadly, but in 30 seconds.
In 30 seconds, that is a really tricky one. To be remembered for the good I've done.
Yeah. There you go.
Keep it simple.
Well, that was good enough. Well, having visited and seen you in action and seen what the kids say, I think that is evidence from all the kids that visit you and all the things you do around the world. And although, the pandemic's got in the way and I wasn't physically able to be with you for the Teaching Awards, it was great to see all the photographs and the videos emerge and your big cheesy smile out there as you lifted up your award and stuff. And how cruel all your school to play all that on, you're thinking facing a disciplinary rather than a Teaching Award. But can you pass on my best wishes to Leanne and everyone else at your school? And everyone for listening, Stephen Sadler, do check him out. If you need help with DT or some robots or STEM or whatever it is, this is the man. He is the big cheese. So, Stephen, thank you for your time. I hope to see you physically in the future soon. I'm back on the road, so hopefully I'll come and pop in soon and say hello.
Brilliant.
All right, all the best.
All the best.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To continue the conversation, head over to www.teachertoolkit.co.uk and our social media channels to access all the links and resources mentioned on today's show. Why not share this with your colleagues and give them the gift of time, reduced workload, and increased impact? Until the next time, before you look after your students, look after yourself.